Greet you in the name of Jesus once again this afternoon. Joy to be in the house of God. Big lunch, good food, lots of food. What's in your jar now? Just this week, we get a package in the mail, and the package came from Berlin Seeds, and the package was full of seeds, the dreams of a garden and springtime and summertime. Takes a little faith. I was down here for ministers' meeting and conference this week, and on the way home, traveling across Interstate 80, it was snowing so hard we had to slow down. The ground was white. And I was thinking about my box of seeds at home and wondering, will I ever be able to plant them? Well, we're looking at the subject of youth this morning. And there's a very real sense in which, as we look at the different phases in life, if you want to call them, they really do mirror the seasons that God brings as well. You have the springtime of new growth, represented in the new life, new children come into our homes and children grow. They grow so fast. And then, of course, you have the summer where lots of fruit. It's where our youth are supposed to be, right? Fruit-bearing years. Autumn, perhaps it's more a summer of growth and beauty, but some fruit as well. But then an autumn of fruitfulness and a winter of what? Withering decline. Is that too hard to say? That happens. It happens to people. There's a song that talks about this. Opening your songbooks, Designs Praises, number 359. We sang this song recently, and I was surprised at the words because it was a different message than what I think of when I think of the song. I should have done a quiz first. When you think of the song by Cool Siloam, Shady Rill, what part of the songbook would you put it in? Is it a funeral hymn? Is it a child training hymn? Just look at this song with me a little bit. Actually, let's sing the first verse together. We're going to try to keep you awake this afternoon. Can you give me the key of D? Les, please.
Ooh, by Kusalam Shady. How sweet the lily grows, how sweet the breath beneath the hill of Sharon's dewy rose.
Just stop and think about that a bit. Can you picture what the hymn writer was saying? I'm not even sure how to say his name, written back in 1872. He's picturing this beautiful, I'm going to say lush garden, if you would. This place of beauty and relaxation and fruitfulness and vegetation, okay? He's painting a beautiful picture. And what does he say? The initial title for this song was Christ, a Pattern for Children. And look how he goes on. He talks about, just like this beautiful picture that we just sang about, lo, such the child whose early feet the paths of peace have trod, whose secret heart with influence sweet is upward drawn to God. And you see where he starts to go with it. He says, this is the picture of a child who is taught early and grows into a life of fruitfulness. It's like a beautiful garden. And then he talks about Christ. But in between that, there's two verses that are normally skipped, and I see that they are in this book as well. In the original poem, he goes like this. By Cool Siloam's Shady Rill, the lily must decay, the rose that blooms beneath the hill must shortly fade away, and soon, too soon, the wintry hour of man's maturer age will shake the soul with sorrow's power and stormy passion's rage. And he follows the life. We can look at new growth in children and youth, especially with this beautiful, we anticipate a lovely life, and yet sometimes there's disease, there's sickness, sometimes there's sin, passion's rage. People fall away from God, and the picture isn't as beautiful as what we intended it to be. And then he refers back to Christ. Let's sing verse 3. O thou whose infant feet.
O thou whose infant feet were found within thy Father's shrine, whose years with changeless virtue crown were
was the beautiful picture of perfection. God sent him down. But then he says, dependent on that bounteous breath, we seek thy grace alone in childhood, manhood, age, and death to keep us still thine own. And that is what we're here to do today, to seek thy grace alone. I don't know where else to go. As we think about children and youth, and the tremendous influence that we as parents or leadership of any kind have on youth. Question I want to ask us this morning, as we think about that context, I want to ask you, if you're raising youth or looking or have young children, what are you aiming for? What are we aiming for? What do you picture when you think of a mature youth? Someone ready to marry? Someone that's old enough to go to the youth sing. Someone that's able to hold a job. Yeah, all of that, and hopefully more. What is maturity? And how do we nurture a garden toward fruit bearing and maturity? The seeds have been sown, they've been watered. The sun is warming the earth. Things are springing forth. What's it going to take to bring it forth to fruit bearing and to maturity? One of the things I want us to remember as we go through this, our society has really, I'm not sure what the word is, if you want to call it institutionalized, or with the way our Christian day schools are set up and public education, everything. So much is geared around a particular age. So you go to school at age 6, right? And you get your driver's license at age 16, and you join the youth group at whatever age it is here. And at 17, you can go to Bible school. And at 21, we say you're of age. And what do we mean by all these things? One of the things I want us to remember, even though those can be good guides for parents, that doesn't define maturity. These numbers are not necessarily an accurate gauge for maturity. As parents, we need to be very, very aware of where our children are, and be very interested in their maturity more than just adding another birthday on. Once again, I just seek an interest in your prayers in this. I feel. I was talking with Virgil a little bit about it, but I don't know that there's any age that we like to preach about child training and youth. I can always find an excuse that I'm not at the right stage in life. But with God's grace, I pray that we can. What I want to look at is what are things that we can keep this picture of a garden and think about you as a parent or a leader or another youth or an older single person. What are things that you can have in your sprinkling can, as it were, that you can nurture these plants? What can you pour into their lives that will help them to bear fruit, that will make them grow into maturity? What is it that we can do? I think about my own immaturity. I don't know even what age you would call a youth, but also recall not nearly all of you were able to be at conference, but Brother Sim preached there. How many of you know Sim Yoder, Sim and Sarah? Our bishop, right? Yeah. Sim said that someone told him, I'm not sure how long ago it was, that one of the things they remembered about him and Sarah was that they were the most immature couple. And I said, how can that be? Gave me a little bit of comfort. I'm just saying, we look at people that have matured and we kind of forget about some of the immaturity, except maybe personally. I remember quite keenly some of the things that happened at Bible school that I look back with regret. But I also had the privilege of being at the youth sing last evening, and I looked at the youth up there, and we had a youth in that crowd for the first time, and I said, is that what maturity is? Just the ability to go up there without holding mom and dad's hand? You can stand up there for a whole service? No, it's more than that, but that's part of it. These are things that our youth start blossoming and growing, and things that they can do. How do we mature? What can we pour into their lives? Open your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs is full of instruction from a father's heart to his son. And a phrase that you hear over and over as you read through the book of Proverbs is, my son, my son. And he reaches out in an effort to pour into his son's life something that will help him through life and help him to mature. I think I have 8 things from the first 3 chapters of Proverbs. Just some general concepts of things that you can put in your sprinkling can, as it were. Things that you can pour into the lives of youth to encourage them toward maturity. Now, well, let's read. Let's read the first 7 verses of Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels, to understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The first thing that I want to suggest to you as a parent or a leader that you need to pour into the lives, that you need to nurture with, is a good dose of the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord. He says here in verse 7 that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. I want to talk about this illustration on the board behind me a little bit. One of the things that we're going to come back to again, and I may use it interchangeably, but maturity equals wisdom, and wisdom equals maturity. That really is what we're aiming for. Brother Paul Freed used to always say at Shepherd's Fold that knowledge is knowing that water freezes at 32 degrees. Wisdom is knowing it's time to slow down if you're driving on the roads and the temperature drops, right? So knowledge is applied wisdom, is applied knowledge. Now, as you think about knowledge and that, how is the fear of the Lord the beginning of knowledge or the beginning of wisdom, as it says some other places in the book of Proverbs? I have this illustration here. There is data all over, all around you. Our children and our youth are constantly being fed data, just raw data. Things like 192.234.235.678 version 2.0. Now, what is that? Any idea? No, it's mostly made up. But that is a piece of data. That's a piece of data, something similar to that, that's happening down the road here at 70 or at 22 and 743. Is that where the next traffic light is up the road? And that simply means that the light has turned red at the location of 743 and 22. The light has turned red, okay? There's a network going on, and this data is being processed, and that light has turned red. We're sitting here in church. That makes absolutely no difference to us, right? That's just raw data. That doesn't mean anything. One of the things that we need to start doing as parents is to start giving some meaning to that data. Well, in this case, The meaning for this data would be, get my marker out, I already said, we'll just say 22 and 743, okay? This is the traffic light, okay? It's telling you where it is. Now, that's the meaning, but we need to start giving context to that. That still doesn't really mean much, but when we start giving context, then we say, wait a minute, we're driving down 22, headed east on our way home from church, and this data now is pertinent, right? The light has turned red in front of us, and what's it time to do? Wisdom applies this and says stop, okay? That's the stage of data, so just kind of picture that. Now, of course, wisdom is what we're aiming for, and there's so much available, and we have to channel that. We have to give context and meaning and apply that to our children's and our youth's lives and form wisdom at the top, okay? Proverb writer says the fear of the Lord is the foundation of all of that. You take all of that, maybe I should finish writing that in, just say, I'm traveling. And stop. It can get overwhelming as parents with all the data. Things that our youth hear, process, do. Okay? There's just a whole world going around. The educational system says getting all of this in place is the answer to the world's problems. If we can take all this data and we can feed it the right direction, we can educate people to a place of benefit in society. And there's some point to that. But the proverb writer says there's more than that. There's something that undergirds all of this. This is going on. But if you forget the fear of the Lord, this won't work. This won't work. The fear of the Lord. And so, here's what I want us to think about. This is what you need to pour in. As life happens, as you drive, as you eat lunch at the table, as you leave for work in the morning, as you get phone calls that somebody passed away, as life happens, you have to live it in the context of the fear of the Lord. Your children, our youth must hear us talk about God. They must hear us talk about the seriousness of life and just take everything that's happening and remind them of God and remind them of our responsibility to God and our accountability to God. That must be woven in to all this data or we'll get lost in the shuffle. Our children will fill up with raw data, like it or not. We can't avoid it. They soak it up like sponges. But it is so important when we're studying science in school or we're studying history or all of that has to be in the context of the fear of the Lord. Everything that we do needs to be done in light of eternity, and our children need to hear that. I know that I'm weak on that. It's easy to let life just happen. We have to be intentional about teaching the fear of the Lord. God cares about what we're doing. What about this decision? Do we go here or don't we? Well, does God care about it? Do they hear us pray about it in their presence? Teach them the fear of the Lord in the context of finding knowledge and wisdom. Sometimes our biggest concern is their career or their life or helping them get established or get ahead. No, our biggest concern must be their conversion. And that doesn't mean we're preaching at them every day, but we talk to them in light of eternity and in the context of living for God. Deuteronomy 6 teaches us that it's a full-time job. I'll just read one verse from there. Thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. Thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down and when thou risest up. God makes it clear that children will learn for some time. Sometimes they will learn without even understanding. They'll learn some of these things and they won't necessarily even understand how it fits into the picture of life. But he goes on to say, and when thy son asketh thee in time to come, saying, what mean thy testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord hath commanded you? Then teach them, and teach it in the context of the fear of the Lord. Teach them the truth of God. Teach them why we're here. Teach them what it means to walk with God. This starts with children. It's hard to decipher between children and youth. We start early. I can't enforce that encourage that enough. We have to start young. We have to start young if we're going to build a relationship, be able to do it with our youth. Well, that's the longest one. Let's go over a few more briefly here. Go on to Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Another thing that should be in our sprinkling cans or in our jars that we can share with our children is the importance of respecting authority. Very, very important one. If we're going to help our youth to take their lives and we shape them into wise young men and women, we need to teach them the importance of respect for authority. He says, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother. This parent cared about his child. He had a burden for his child that he would listen, that he would care, that he would obey, that he would understand. One of the things I'm going to say over and over is that we teach these by example. We teach this by example. What kind of respect do we have for the authorities in our lives? How do we talk about them? How do we talk about the ministry when we sit down at the table? How do we talk about the school teacher when the stories come home? How do we talk about the authorities? Our children will learn what's in our jar pretty quickly. When we start pouring out into their lives, they'll learn if it's a respect for authority or a disrespect for authority. Number three, another thing we must pour into their lives, we need to give them the satisfaction of saying no to sin and to things that are wrong. They need to learn what it means to say no. Let's read verses 10 to 19. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privately for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Come with us, they're saying. Come, let's have fun together. Let's go spoil. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privately for their own lives. So are the ways of every one that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. There's a point, and I don't even understand exactly where all it is, but there's a time in our children's lives where there's a lot of saying no that we can do for them. And then there's a time that comes where they end up taking that responsibility. And of course, we're there beside them. We walk with them. And like the proverb writer, we say, my son, don't consent. But we have to let them make that choice. The allurement of sin is strong. There's greed. The allurement of greed and just wanting to get things for ourselves is strong, especially for youth. They look ahead and they're full of energy and they have time that they can pour into hobbies and money making. And are we going to coach them and help them to learn when to say no, particularly to sin and to things that would draw them away from God and the commitment to God? It's part of the maturing process, is learning to sort through, learning to say no. And as authority figures, one of the things that youth should hear us say, I think, perhaps this could be taken wrong too, but there's times where we will tell them, listen, I'm not going to tell you yes or no, but let's talk about this. Let's go to the scriptures together. You get a concordance and you look up those scriptures and you bring them back and then we'll talk about them. I want to help you make this decision, but I want you to make this decision. And that is a gift that we give them. And I don't want to say that too loosely, but there's something to allowing them make some of those choices that honor God. There's a satisfaction when they realize they can stand on their two feet by the grace of God and they can say no to sin and yes to God. We want to help them walk through that. Number four, another thing that we pour into their lives is, I called it this, the imperative of taking responsibility. One of the things that children, and particularly youth, must learn, it starts with children, but youth must learn the importance of taking responsibility, being responsible young men. Turn to chapter 2 of Proverbs. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. I don't know if you've ever heard the concept before or not. If you're a school teacher, you probably have. I heard it from a school teacher. But did you ever hear of the concept of the monkey on the shoulder? There's a book written by a school teacher, I think, about putting the monkey on their shoulder. Now, the monkey on the shoulder is a type of a responsibility. Okay, for instance, with my children, we have a number of chores to do. We have some chickens, and we have some goats, and we have some turkeys, and just little things to do. But it's the boy's job to go out there and feed these animals. Now, it's easy for me as a parent to sit back and say, did you feed the goats this morning? Did you collect the eggs? Okay, and we take that monkey from them, as it were. What we have to do, one of the things we must do with our children is to teach them that they carry that. They can't pass it to us. It's their job, it's their responsibility to make sure that this gets done. Now, as youth, as children, it's important, but as youth, it's so imperative that youth learn to take responsibility for the things that are their responsibility to do. This comes in a whole lot of different ways, but often what happens, at least in my life as I look back, some of these things became clearer to me as my parents left me go out and do some other things that were out from underneath my parents' authority. You go to Shepherd's Fold and you are under a different authority and you're given different responsibilities, and suddenly mom and dad aren't there to say, hey, did you do your laundry, right? We had to do our own laundry. I don't know if it's still that way. Did you iron your shirt? These are now my responsibilities. And as parents, we do our children a tremendous disfavor if we don't teach them to be responsible as children and then as youth. Teach them to carry that monkey, as it were. I think parents cringe a bit. I look back and I realize how my parents probably did and how I think about my children getting older. But it's important. But I think about other administrators and group leaders, whether it's work projects, relief projects, Shepherd's Fold, whatever it is. Be patient with youth. Be patient. They're learning. We have to give them some grace as they mature. But make them, help them carry that weight of responsibility on their own shoulder. It has a way of maturing, has a way of bringing fruit. It's an opportunity for God-given gifts and talents to shine and develop. The fifth one I have, another thing, once again, these are things, I don't want you to forget it. These are things that have to be in your jar that you can pour out. This one is the peace of trusting God. Something that a youth that's going to be mature, that's going to be gifted with wisdom, be a wise young man or young lady, they need to know the peace of trusting God. We see that in chapter 3, verse 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Disappointments come in life. They come not just to older people, not just when our parents die and we're, well, at whatever age. No, it happens to youth. Disappointments in relationships, friendships, things happen. Disappointments with jobs, disappointments with maybe a voluntary service opportunity that doesn't work out, or whatever. It is so important that as a parent, one of the things that we're pouring into them out of our own experience is the ability to trust God through all of these. God knows what he's doing, and I will be at peace with it. If we as a parent can walk that pathway, we will give our children and youth a tremendous gift to be able to also endeavor to climb that hill as well. It's not always easy, but again, I think about how my parents walked beside me through various circumstances, and it's a gift that parents have that they can give their children when they are also finding peace in the will of God. Number six, the joy of giving, sharing, and serving. The joy of giving, sharing, and serving. Chapter 3 of Proverbs, verses 9 and 10. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. As young people, I think that it is, a must. It is so important that you find some type of voluntary service opportunity. I'm not saying it has to be a year or 3 years, or that it can't be just New York for Jesus or whatever, but you should find opportunities or multiple opportunities. But we're talking to the parents in particular. As parents, help your children find the joy of serving, the joy of giving, the joy of sharing. Whether it's in the offering at home or supporting missions abroad, we need to help them find that joy. Again, I've seen youth too often who just, they get a good job right out of school and they just work, and they can turn out okay, but there's some tremendous maturing that happens. So many times when a young person is willing to give, to share, to serve in a voluntary way, and as parents, how are we going to teach them that? The joy of giving, sharing, and serving? Do you think maybe by what's in our jar? What's in our cup? Yeah, I think so. Number seven, another thing that we need to help them in their maturing, and that is to accept chastening. My son, verse 11 and 12, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. There will be times where people will come to your youth and they will challenge them or correct them or chasten them or whatever word you want to use. At that point, you as a parent have an option. You have a decision to make. Whether you're going to pour out grace into your child's life and say, I need to accept it. Maybe they didn't even understand it correctly, but there's something there for you. Or whether we're going to say, don't listen to them, okay? What do we do with those things? What do we do with challenges that come to our youth? What do we do when the ministry, parents so easily stick up for their youth. Be very, very careful about that, father, mother. We have a tendency to take it personal as parents, but let's allow the chastening to have its work in a maturing youth. It will do them good. Number eight, yet another thing we need to help our youth in maturing is developing a value system. This happens by default, but if we let it happen by default, the value system will not be a correct value system. Let's read verses 13 to 20. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. See what he's saying? There's something actually better than gold and silver and making money. There's something that will bring happiness that isn't that. She's more precious than rubies, and all the things that thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. What is that? Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is everyone that retaineth her. The Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth, by understanding hath he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths are broken up, and the clouds drop down the dew. It's so easy to allow the world's value system to become ours. And as young people, that is a tremendous temptation. What goes fast, and what looks cool, and what is flashy and shiny and attractive, okay? These things catch our eyes as youth. These are the things that are so easy to pursue, the things that we think will bring us acceptance and happiness and friends. The proverb writer says there's something more than that. There's something better than that. How important is it to find time for worship? How important is it to find time for church functions? What are our youth tapping into to determine what is valuable? It should be the Word, but it's so easy to have other shaping influences so easily deter or skew that picture or make it fuzzy. Like, what is it that brings happiness? Well, once again, what's in our cups, parents? What is our value system? What's important to us? I remember the testimony of a school teacher who said that he had a group of a family that came to their school, and that family, the children all talked about the missionary stories that they read. They studied history of missions and missionaries. And he said, it's no wonder. Well, he said, first of all, what do you think was happening in the home? Yeah, the parents were excited about mission work. And the parents and most of the children are all in foreign mission fields today. That's what was valuable to them. That's what was important to the parents. And the children caught hold of that vision, and it shaped their value system. I ask us as parents, how are we going to nurture maturity? One of the ways is to make sure our value system is God's value system. Think about the people that you look up to in your life who shaped your life. What did they do? What did they say? What were their values? Go and do thou likewise, Jesus says. What are we pouring from our containers? What do we have? We teach by example, primarily. We teach by words, but primarily by example. So may God help us. I want to read a poem in closing. He stood at the crossroads, all alone, the sunlight in his face. He had no thought for an evil course. He was set for a manly race. But the road stretched east and the road stretched west. And he did not know which road was best. So he took the wrong road and it led him down. And he lost the race and the victor's crown. He was caught at last in an angry snare, because no one stood at the crossroads there to show him the better road. Another day, at the selfsame place, a boy with high hopes stood. He too was set for a manly race. He was seeking the things that were good. And one was there who the roads did know, and that one showed him the way to go. So he turned away from the road leading down, and he won the race and the victor's crown. He walks today the highway fair, because one stood at the crossroads there to show him the better road. May God help us. Whatever place we are, leaders, parents, to stand in the crossroad and to nurture, to pour into the lives of our youth things that will lead them toward a life of wisdom and a life of serving and pleasing God. Let's kneel for prayer.